Okay, okay, good. I was like, I don't know if I turned it on right. So, first of all, I am so honored to be here. There's a couple things I want to acknowledge. So everybody knows that when Pastor Aaron comes up here, he has to talk for about 30 minutes before he starts his message. So of course he needed to make sure that he did a quick video for me, right? Before he had to be, you know, no, I'm just kidding. I can rest assured I will not be talking for 30 minutes and then start with point number one. We will get into it a lot quicker than that. Okay. So if anything, if I stink tonight, you have a confidence that I will get you out of here on time. Maybe, okay? And then also, my team, I am so honored and grateful and humbled and all the things that would make me cry with the people that I serve with the people that are not just a part of my team, but they're a part of my life, and they're my friends, and I'm just grateful for them. So thank you guys for all being here tonight. And then the other thing is I want to thank... this sounds like an Emmy Award speech. I would like to thank, no, but really, I'm just thankful that Pastor Aaron is allowing me to be able to be here. He must put a lot of trust in me because he is not here to kick me off the stage if I'm not good. But also just Pastor Rick for allowing me the opportunity to grow that it didn't start here, right? That being here, being able to speak with you guys on this stage, it started with, as a teenager, cutting donuts in half, right? Because for some reason, we couldn't give people a whole donut on Sundays. We had to cut them in half. Probably budget, I don't know. But it was easy for him to do because he had three kids. So, you know, that's what we did. So, but it started with just the small commitments and things like that that has just opened the doors for opportunities. And so I'm honored and humbled that I get to be here. I do want to say that we have an amazing church. And the people that go here, and I'm not just, I'm genuinely talking about the people of Cedar Point Church. Like, wow, whether you come and you stay or you come through these doors, you'll leave here knowing that you are loved and hopefully knowing that we want to be a part of changing your story. So I'm grateful to be able to be here and talk to you guys for a few minutes tonight. I don't think anybody said it, so I'm going to say for Aaron, if you have your phones, go ahead and get on our Facebook page really quick, share the live stream, invite people to church. That's the one thing we can do is invite people, and that's how we reach people is by inviting people. So. Also, if you guys start to get bored, I will throw Sour Patch Kids at you. So I'm just making sure. My team said it. They said, if anything, she'll give you candy. And they're not wrong. I literally was like, that's actually what I do. So I will not probably really throw Sour Patch Kids at you unless you're sleeping. Then I'll throw Sour Patch Kids at you. But I wanted to basically say a few things. Like, who is fake snoring? Oh, damn it, really? Come on. It was a kid, so I'll accept it. I've had a lot of anxiety about speaking today, so I'm just going to be really transparent with you guys. I normally speak to kids, and I normally speak to women once a year, and so this is a transition for me to speak to a whole group of people, and I am excited, but I've been really anxious. One of the things that I wanted to lay out is that a lot of you guys have said, I can't wait to hear your testimony, and I just don't want to disappoint you guys. I'm not giving a full-on testimony, but I am going to give you guys some tools that helped me in my own life to get to me to where I am, where God's still doing work in me, but just some things that he has helped me to get there. So we're going to get started. Are you ready? Okay, let's pull that Bible out. We're going to go to the book of Genesis. Genesis is the very first book of the New Testament. I'm going to have to be careful not to talk to you guys jokingly like kids, like, you're going to open your book, and at least I'm not making you say, this is my Bible, because we do it a different way in the kids' ministry, but we still do it. So, I want to talk to you guys tonight about what does a life fully surrendered to the will of God look like? What does a life fully surrendered to the will of God look like? So in Genesis chapter 12, verse 1 through 5, like I said, I'm going to give you guys three tools to put in your hands tonight. So when you leave here, hopefully they speak to you and they'll help you on the next steps or the next season of your life that you're going to be going through. So Genesis chapter 12, verse 1 said, the Lord had said to Abram, which is Abraham, leave your native country, your relatives, and your father's family. Leave your native country. Everybody say leave. Leave your native country, your relatives, your father's family, and go to the land that I will show you. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you and make you famous, and you will be a blessing to others. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who treat you with contempt. All the families on earth will be blessed through you. So Abraham departed as the Lord had instructed, and Lot went with him. Abraham was 75 years old when he left Haran. I really want you guys to understand this. Leave your native country. Leave your relatives. You're probably wondering, like, why would the Lord ask him to leave everything that he's ever known? Because not only is he leaving everything that he's ever known, it's stated here, he only took a few family members with him. So he left a lot of his family. And here's why. The culture at that time, they believed in multiple gods, okay? They believed in multiple gods. And God wanted to start to change and reveal to the people that there is only one God. And so at this time, Abraham and his family, the influence that they had around him, God said, I need to take you away in order to reveal that there's only one God. Now, I want you guys to understand what the assignment was. He's leaving people. He's leaving everything he's ever known. God was basically saying, I can't use you here. There's too many distractions. There's too many people that are going to try to steer you one way. There's too many voices that would encourage you to not listen to my voice. And so what did he do? He had Abraham leave. Leave everything he ever knew. What I love about this story is not only did God give him a new assignment, but there was a promise with the assignment. When you go, this is what I'm going to do. When you leave, this is what I'm going to do. Now, have you guys ever thought about just packing your stuff up and leaving your family? I mean, people are like, 100%, that's why I'm here, and they're over there on the East Coast, right? No, I'm just kidding, but kind of not kidding. But I think about this is that this is all Abraham had ever known. So in your own life, I want to ask you, where you are right now, whether you have family, the family you have in your life, the friendships you have in your life, your coworkers, the people you surround yourself with, are they causing you to act a certain way? Change how you live? Are they pushing you further away from the voice of God? Are they causing you to listen to culture? Because that was the thing here, is God knew, hey, Abraham, you're gonna be influenced by the culture. You're going to be influenced by what's taking place here. Whether they're family or not, they're not going to push you to my voice. They're not going to take you to where I need you to go. And so Abraham, guess what? He packed up his stuff, he packed up his family, and he left. He left everything he ever knew. What gave Abraham the confidence to leave his home? And I'm asking you guys this, is there something in your life that is just holding you tight? And maybe you don't have the confidence to walk away from it? Abraham left his family. He left his everything he ever knew. What gave him the confidence to do that? He trusted God. He knew God did not make empty promises. When God says there's better, he genuinely means there's better. So what does a life fully surrendered to the will of God look like? The first thing is sometimes it's a change in location. Sometimes he's asking you, are you willing to pack your stuff and leave these things that are a distraction to you? Listen, I'm just gonna say this. Sometimes we don't want to leave family because they're family, but they're the one thing that's keeping us stuck. We don't want to stop friendships because we have this idea that these are the only friends we'll ever have. So we stay. And these chains, they build and they get heavy and they get heavy. And at some point, they're so heavy, you know, the more chains you have, guess what happens? It's harder to leave. It's harder to change locations. It's harder to find your place somewhere else. So point number one is this. What does a life fully surrendered to the will of God look like? It looks like a change in location. Who are you living with? Don't say your spouse. No. But really, whose voices, whose influence do you have in your life that all they do every time you're around them is put another chain on you? It's not too late. I want to say that too, it's not too late. You know how I know that? Because Abraham was 75 years old. It's not too late. The promise happens after the obedience in the assignment. See, once Abraham left, I love this. I actually, if you go on a little bit further, 1-5, we're going to skip just a little bit. It's like, he took his wife, his nephew Lot, and all his wealth, his livestock, all the people he had taken into his household, and headed for the land of Canaan. When they arrived in Canaan, Abraham traveled through the land as far as Shechem. There he set up beside the oak of Moreh, I don't know. At that time, the area was inhabited. Then the Lord appeared to him. Then. So he gave him the assignment. He said, I need you to leave these things behind. I need you to trust what I'm asking you to do. And when you go, then I'm going to reveal to you what I have for you. Guys, the promise happens after the obedience to the assignment God gives us. You want to see the promise? You better start obeying the voice of God. You better start listening. You're here. You're here at church tonight, which tells me you're not turning a blind ear to the voice of God. Clearly, you can hear him. But sometimes we have a whisper and all this noise in the background, and the noise needs to be the whisper, and God's voice needs to be the loudest thing you hear. The promise comes after the obedience. What does a life fully surrendered to the will of God look like? It looks like a change in location. So in my own life, I wish Aaron was here so I could share this story, but he's listening, hopefully. If not, I'll know. Because he'll text me afterwards, and anyways. In 2018, if you've been to the women's conferences or you've heard me speak before, I've shared a lot of my story. I'm not going to get too deep into it, but in 2017, I had a baby, and then 4 months later, I found out I was pregnant again, and the pregnancy would make baby number 4. So I'm a wife with 4 kids. So I had my daughter in 2017. I found out I was pregnant 4 months later. And then by towards the end of 2017, I was a wreck. I was unwell. And it was just this like tug between motherhood and being, letting go of what I was doing, which I was in full-time children's ministry here at Cedar Point at the time, but I was struggling to really hone in on being a mom. It was literally one of the hardest seasons of my life. And so I remember sitting down with pastor, and I was just like, it was like 9 o'clock at night. I had came up to the church. I was literally having a crisis. I was not good. And I said, I can't do this anymore. And he was like, okay, what does that look like? I'm like, that looks like, here's my resignation. but he said, he was like, okay, so what are you going to do? And I'm like, I don't know. I just know that God's asking me to step down and I need to get healthy. And he's like, okay, cool. Who do you want to take your place? No, he said, we should start looking for someone. And I said, well, you don't need to. And he's like, why? I'm like, because you have Aaron. Like, you don't need anybody else. Because at that point, Aaron had been he had been serving on the team with me, and it was a no-brainer. And they were like, do you think he's good for the job? I'm like, I will be angry. And if Aaron was up here, he would say pissed, because apparently you're allowed to say that on Monday nights. Thank you. That was for you, Aaron. If we didn't at least offer him the job. And anyways, I say all that. So the Lord was really working behind the scenes, and this whole time there was this idea that if I didn't do it, who was going to do it? Who was going to do it? And then someone told me, they said, Ashley, you act like God's only called you, but he's called other people to do the thing that you're doing. And all you're doing when you stay longer than you're supposed to is standing in the way of someone else's assignment. And so I was like, you're right. And so I was able to leave, and it was literally this domino effect, because Aaron's up here today and he's amazing and I'm so grateful for him. But I say all of that because when 2018 rolled around, I stepped away 2017, December, 2018 of February, I had my son. And then about 4 years later, Aaron was like, hey, I'm diving headfirst into recovery ministry, and I love kids, but not anymore. So if you could, so you're going to need to find somebody. And it was a full circle of moment, because Dad's like, who should we hire? And Aaron's like, I know who we should hire. And it was great. So I ended up being offered the job back, and it took me months to commit to saying yes to coming back to kids ministry, even though I knew that that's what I was called to do. I struggled with saying yes to coming back. Do you want to know why? Because in that season of my life when my kid was 4, I was living my life in a way that was not good. And there's elements of my story that when I think back about it, it's very humiliating for me. And so I want you guys to know that if you carry a lot of shame and humiliation with your past, first of all, we need to let that go, right? But second of all, you're not alone, because I'm in full-time children's ministry, and there are elements of my past that I'm like, when I sat down with the pastor, I was like, I don't want to share this. He said, that's okay, but just share how it felt. And I was not good. And I had realized, like, taking this position full-time meant that I had to stop living my life the way that it was. I was a mediocre mom. I was a crappy wife. And I spent a lot of my time, like, socializing with people who I liked the fact that they didn't know the Christian Ashley. Does that make sense? They didn't know that they didn't see me as just, my walk with God didn't matter to them. So there wasn't an accountability, or I wasn't held to a certain standard. It was just like, these are people I hang out with. They know me as Ashley. They don't know that I've done X, that I was in ministry and da da da. So it's fine. And so when I got offered the job, there was literally this pull of, if I take this job, I have to stop living this way. And yet, over here is the voice of God saying, I have so much better for you. I've called you to do amazing things. But that voice at that time felt like a whisper. And this life over here felt more comfortable and safe. And by the grace of God, I had discovered after people who are in my life who said, what are you doing with your life? And I was able to kind of turn that away. And I remember going in, and actually Aaron Shaw and I got into a huge fight, because he saw how I was living and he called me out on my crap, and I was not okay with it. In fact, I called pastor that day and I was like, hey, listen, I am not taking the job. I will never work with Aaron. Ever. There is not a single person I would want to be employed with. I will not do it. And then I had another pastor friend call me and say, you're going to let one person who disagrees with you change the assignment God has for you? And I had realized that this tension was because, one, Aaron loved me, and there was people in my life that loved me. But two, he also saw. There were people in my life that saw, why aren't you doing this thing that God has called you to do? So I accepted the job. I've been doing full-time, I've been here almost 3 years full-time since. God's been so gracious and kind to me when I have not deserved it. But because of that, because I said yes to the assignment and no to these distractions, the promises of God have just flooded into my life. But it really started with me deciding, I'm not gonna live like this anymore. This voice is not gonna be the loudest voice in my life. What does a life fully surrendered to the will of God look like? It looks like a change in location. Next, sorry, I feel like I'm turning into Aaron. Ah! We're gonna go to point number two. If you have your Bibles, we're gonna go to Philippians chapter 3. Chapter 3, verse 8. Yeah, Philippians chapter 3, verse 5. I think I said 8. I'm going to say verse 5 if I said that. Okay. Okay, so what we see here is the person that's talking right now in Philippians, his name is Paul. His name used to be Saul until he had an encounter with God. God changed his name to Paul because God changed his life, right? God can still change our name, and that's what he did with Paul. And so he's talking here, and he said in verse 5, I was circumcised when I was 8 days old. I am a pure-blooded citizen of Israel and a member of the tribe of Benjamin, a real Hebrew if there ever was one. I was a member of the Pharisees who demanded the strictest obedience to the Jewish law. I was so zealous that I harshly persecuted the church. And as for righteousness, I obeyed the law without fault. I once thought. If you're taking notes, I really want you to write that down. I once thought these things were valuable, but now I consider them worthless because of what Christ has done. Paul is saying these things used to matter to me, and now they carry no value in my life. I want to ask you guys a question. You can close your eyes and think about this or just stare at me. That might be a little uncomfortable, but it's fine. If you were to write a story about your life, what would the title of your book be called? Paul had such a self-awareness about his past that he comfortably used it when telling his own story. It wasn't something he talked about to discredit himself, but something he used to remind people what a life fully surrendered to the will of God looks like when you choose to change your plans. Sometimes we think our plans are the best plans. We think we know what's best for us, for our family, for our kids, for our future. And yet when we look at Paul here, he's literally saying, I used to do all these things. And not only that, but like, I thought that that was a good thing. But then he's using this and saying, I used to think that those things were valuable. What would the story What would the book title be called for your own life? Your changed story, it's the most relatable thing you can give somebody. The most relatable thing you can give someone. And let me say this, I'm not saying, because if I was to stand everybody up here and say, what's your problem? What's your problem? Not in a mean way, but like, what do you struggle with, right? What's your problem? What do you struggle with? What's the thing that you feel like has held you back? What is it? And everybody would probably say something different, right? And then I would ask you, well, why are you here? And you would probably tell me you're here because you want to experience life change, right? How many of you guys are here because you want to experience life change? The way that you've lived your life up to this point is no longer of value to you. So you want to change your life. And Paul is saying, how I lived here, what I did here, the choices I made here, that's no longer of value to me because I've experienced on the other side what a life looks like when I decide to stop making my own plans and let God step in and change my plans. I let him decide what my life looks like. I let him decide what happens. And so the most relatable thing you can give someone is a changed story. When your story changes, it's gonna help other people's story change. Your own personal relationship, your own personal walk with Jesus, it's literally the thing that's going to lead other people to Jesus. What does a life fully surrendered to the will of God look like? It looks like a change in location, but it also looks like a change in plans. There's another thing I wanted to say to you guys is that your change story is the most relatable thing you can give someone, but there was also, I love this, we look at Paul in Acts chapter 26. I'm not gonna really go through this whole thing, but if you have your Bible or you're taking notes, write that down, Acts chapter 26. Okay. My dad was like, make sure that you block out your pages to save time. I tried, but it didn't work out very good. Okay, so in chapter 26, verse 12, we see Paul here, and he is standing in front of a guy named King Agrippa. Did I say it right? Yes! King Agrippa. And what he's saying whenever he's standing in front of him is he's basically has this one chance to start talking about basically kind of pleading his case. And you know what? And telling King Agrippa about what Jesus has done and what God has done in his own life, right? And so what does he do? He doesn't get up there and start talking about the fact that he wrote 2/3 of the New Testament. He doesn't get up there and start talking about all of his accomplishments and all of the great things that he has done. You know what he starts doing? He starts talking about how Jesus has changed his story. That's what he did. The people around him were saying, what are you doing? Why are you using, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm using this time to let you know that all these plants, all these things that I once thought valuable, promotions in my job, hanging out with the people who were high and mighty, who would get me where I needed to go, having the next best thing, holding on to the things that bring me joy whenever all I really need is Jesus, right? He's saying all these things that I once thought valuable, they mean nothing. He got up there in front of King Agrippa, and what did he do? He started sharing how God changed his story. The best thing you can do, the most relatable thing you have to share with anybody, whether you think so or not, you're here. That's a testament to other people. I'm here because God stepped in when I needed him most, and he's not done, but he is changing my story. We also see it again in John chapter 9 with the blind man. Jesus heals a blind man. He goes in, and the Pharisees are like, what happened? Who is this? And they're asking him questions, and you know what the blind man says? He says, I don't know. All I know is once I was blind, and now I can see. God steps in and he changes your story. If you are feeling like you are full of despair or you're struggling with, I do not know if I'm ready to surrender, I want to encourage you to start thinking about changing your plans. Thinking about who you spend the most time with, thinking about where you're at in life, and then also refiguring out, is this really what I want? And knowing that my plans mean absolutely nothing if they aren't a part of God's plans. They won't get you anywhere. Number 3, and we're gonna close with this. And I just hit 0 on the TV, so call me Pastor Aaron. Actually, don't do that. All right, so the last one, I wanna close with this, is Brent Venables, Boomer Sooner, once said during an interview about how he feels about the pressure to succeed, which he stated, pressure is a privilege. Usually, if you have a tremendous amount of pressure, it's because you have somebody relying on you. What's the alternative to pressure? No pressure means no expectations, no records to set, no award-worthy performances, no finding out what you might have been capable of, and no chance to change your story. So I want you guys to know, if you're in a season of figuring out the new you, letting go of the things that are hard, if you're in the middle of sobriety, if you are literally like the days are ticking every day for chip ceremony at Cedar Point Recovery, and it is the thing that is keeping you going, I want you guys to know that is a good thing. that pressure is a good thing because it means that people expect something from you. They expect you to succeed. They're holding you to higher standards. Those are the people that you need in your life. If there's no pressure, there's failure. If there's no pressure, you can bet that you're probably not where you need to be. You're probably not living in the plans God has for you. So I can't, Dad always turns it off. I can't do it. There's supposed to be pressure in your life. If you are feeling pressure right now, it's because God is doing something incredible in your life. It's because someone out there is relying on you. I have a few pictures I'm going to show you guys. Cue the sound booth. First one is this. These are my kids. They're pretty cute, I guess, sometimes. Every day I wake up and there's this enormous amount of pressure to be the best mom I can be. And it, well, I can say it, sucks sometimes. And it's really, really, really hard. And a lot of times I say to my husband, why did we do this? What did we sign up for? But I know that the best version of themselves is only going to be taught from the best version of me. That's a lot of pressure. The next picture is me and my husband. Woo, yeah, whoever that was. I know, look at that cowboy hat. No. There's this pressure every day, every night when the kids go to bed, to be a good wife. To be faithful, and not just in our commitment, but just in our love, right? That we're not just coasting through our day-to-day of getting up, you go to your place, I go to mine, you go to your job, I go to my whatever, and then we come in at night, and it's just the same routine of Groundhog Day. There's this pressure to make sure that I'm being the wife that God has called me to be, that I'm loving my husband in the midst of our hard places, that I'm journeying with him, because love, life and marriage, it is a journey. Every day, every year we're married, it's hard. But if I wanna have a good marriage, I have to wake up with the pressure. He's relying on me. I'm relying on him. We're relying on each other to have a good marriage. The next picture is this. This is my team and some of the kids that I minister to. Yep, thank you. Yeah, it's amazing. Before I took the job, I didn't want this pressure. I didn't know how I could successfully minister to my own kids, yet have the privilege of being able to minister to other people's kids. If I'm not good, how can I successfully lead kids and teach them about Jesus? But man, by the grace of God, he's just shown up. But every day, every decision I make, every time I'm prepping, every time I'm growing our ministry, and my team will tell you, I sit with them a lot and I say, hey, look, I'm doing my best. And they know and they're encouraging. But there is this pressure of, how am I taking care of the thing that God has given me? How am I taking care of this that he's entrusted me with? And then the last picture is this. This is myself. This is me. Because although the things like being a mom and being a wife and being a children's pastor, there's pressure that makes you want to do best. There's also and should be this pressure to make sure that you are doing your best to be the version of yourself that God created you to be. There should be pressure on yourself to stay sober. There should be pressure on yourself to show integrity. Pressure of sobriety, it means healthy relationships with people in your life, right? Pressure of having integrity, it causes people to trust you. That means people trust you. And pressure of showing up for people, like my kids, my husband, my job, is being a part of changing someone's story. You should have pressure. I feel like I'm running out of time. I do want to close with this. If you have notes, just write this down. John chapter 21, verse 15. Oh, it's not even 8 o'clock yet. I'm the children's pastor. I know what time Aaron finishes on Monday night. We're good, right, Ryan? So in John chapter 21, what we see here is that a few of the disciples had gone fishing, and this has been the season of their life where they've experienced some of the best years of their life because they've been able to walk with Jesus and be a part of his ministry, which is, can you imagine? Like, whoa. But then it's also some of probably the darkest and hardest times of their life because they had to say goodbye to their Savior and had to trust and believe that he was going to come back for them. And there's also the scary thing because you have a recognition that they have to walk around, and at that time, it was a scary time to be like, hey, yeah, I believe in Jesus. And so I can imagine this feeling of exhaustion and sadness and despair and hopelessness. And one of the things is, this was also after we see Peter, who had denied Jesus 3 times. Now I ask you guys a question, you don't have to answer it, but has there ever been a time in your life where you've denied Jesus? And I mean, that means you chose something else over his voice, over his plans. Something else in your mind at the time was better. And so that's what Peter did here. He had denied Jesus 3 times, and Jesus said, to call him out, he told him he was going to do it, and he did. And so Peter, when you look at his relationship with Jesus, he loved Jesus. I mean, really loved him. And I really love Jesus. But guess what? There are times in my life where I really, really disappoint him. Doesn't mean he loves me any less, but man, there are times. And so you can imagine that the disciples, they go fishing after this hard season. Peter's there after he had denied Jesus. And I can imagine that while he's fishing, especially if you're a fisherman, you go to fish to clear your head, right? That's whenever all the things, like, they're. And I can imagine the amount of guilt and shame that he had from denying Jesus. And I love this part of the story, which we kind of overpassed, but when they got done fishing, they came to shore, and guess what was happening? Jesus was cooking breakfast for them. What? That's pretty cool, if you ask me. Because when I think about it, is it making breakfast for someone a form of love? I think it is. And so these disciples are there, they're sad, they're not sure what's happening next, and they show up and Jesus is like, hey, I know you guys are upset, but guess what? I have pancakes, so let's sit down and talk about it. And eventually you see Jesus take Peter away, and they're on this private walk. And I imagine Peter's like holding his head down, and you know, he probably doesn't feel like he's worthy enough to be next to Jesus. And this is what it says. It says, after breakfast, Jesus asked Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, Peter replied, you know that I love you. And I want you guys to understand is when Jesus is asking him this, when Jesus says, do you love me? He's asking him in the Greek word, Jesus's version is agape, which means an eternal love, a massive love, a love that's almost like, oh, I don't even know how I can give this, right? The kind of love you experience when you hold your brand new baby. Or on your wedding day, because that's the easiest time to have agape love, right? With your spouse. This huge amount of agape love. And Peter's response is, well, yeah, you know that I love you. But Peter uses the Greek word love, phileo. Is that right, Dad? Phileo. Which is different because this word means not agape love, it means friendly love. It's a love we have for our friends, especially close friends. Now, in my opinion, it's easier, right? I have agape love, I could say, for my husband and my kids. And I could look at all my friends and say, I have agape love for you guys too. But it's easier to get rid of you guys than it is my husband, right? I mean, let's be honest. And I imagine when I hear this, my heart hurts for Peter, because you have to think about the amount of shame and pain and humiliation he had felt to look Jesus in the eye and say, I love you, but only this amount. Do I think he loved Jesus any less? Do I think he loved Jesus like that? No, I think he loved Jesus with an agape love. But I think he was so afraid of disappointing him again that he wouldn't allow himself to look Jesus in the eyes and say, man, Father, I love you. And what I realize here is that Jesus showed up that day because he probably knew the amount of shame that Peter would carry for the rest of his life if he hadn't shown up. Do you guys know that Jesus shows up for you? You don't have to carry the shame. You don't have to carry it. He doesn't want you to. You don't have to walk on eggshells with God. You don't have to be lukewarm. You don't have to be afraid to have an agape love for Jesus because you are afraid you're going to mess up again. Can you imagine the type of love and relationship and that we can have with our Savior when we step in knowing, God, I know I screw up, but I am so grateful that you show up in my shame and remind me of the purpose and plan that you have for me. I don't have to stay here. He knew we would screw up. He knew we were messy. He knew we would fall short. He knew that even when we get it right, there's going to be a time where we may not always get it right. And he showed up to Peter and he said, do you love me? Do you love me? And then feed my lambs, Jesus told him. Jesus repeated the question, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Yes, Lord, Peter said, you know I love you. Then take care of my sheep, Jesus said. A third time he asked him. He said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt that Jesus asked the question a third time. He said, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Jesus said, then feed my sheep. He asks him three times. You guys probably know this, but if you don't, Peter denied Jesus three times. Three times. Three times. Peter disappointed Jesus. Three times Peter fell into his messy. Three times Peter gave into his flesh. And Jesus asked him three times, but do you love me? But do you love me? Okay, Peter, I know you messed up. But do you love me? And he wants to ask you today, do you love me? Do you love me enough to accept that you messed up and you're going to change? You're going to let go of this. Stop carrying around this shame. Start focusing on the person that he's called you to be from the very beginning. And when he tells him, go feed my sheep, he's basically saying, Peter, go live a life that represents me. Everything you do, you talk about the goodness of God. Everything you do, you talk about how I stepped in and changed your story. So what is a change in ourself? So point number three is this. What does a life fully surrendered to the will of God look like? It looks like a change in self. A change in ourself. So what does change in self look like? Perhaps the best change in ourself is a life emulating Jesus. A new life emulating Jesus doesn't even compare to going back to what's familiar. And when we do find ourselves going back to our ways, Jesus shows up and asks us, do you not love me more than this? I love this because guess what? When Peter was in his shame and his messy and feeling like he had lost the approval of God and he was so frustrated with himself, he went back to what was comfortable, what was familiar, He went back to the person that he was before he met Jesus, and guess what he did? He went fishing. He went back to his old ways. And that's where Jesus saw him. That's where Jesus found him. And he said, does this life, this familiar life, is it more important to you than a life with me? Does this thing that feels comfortable, this thing that you know how to do because it's just comfortable, is that more important than me? He's asking you, are you willing to let go of familiar and step in to a new life, emulating him, looking like him, reminding people what it's like to have a relationship, or showing people what it's like to have a relationship with Jesus? So what do all of these things have in common? A life fully surrendered to the will of God. What does that look like? What do all these three things have in common? Every one of these things asks me to put my trust in God. I have to trust that this location is no longer serving me, so I need to go somewhere else. I have to trust that the plans that I've had for my life, they aren't his plans, they're my plans, so I have to change them. I have to trust that this familiar person that I have lived, this life that I'm used to, it's no longer serving me. I have to trust. In Mark 10, Jesus is talking to a rich man, and the rich man says, what do I need to do to inherit eternal life? Jesus said, well, you know the Ten Commandments. And then the man said, I do them, the man stated. And Jesus said, well, you just lack one thing. You lack one thing. See, the rich man, his money was more important to him than a relationship with God. And his money was the thing that was more important to him. That was the thing that he was holding on to. And actually, I don't know if the band is coming out or not. Am I supposed to invite them out? Please come out. The band! Sorry, Caleb. Caleb's gonna kill me later. Sorry, Caleb. Robert, can you move this table for me? Thank you. Appreciate you. Give Robert a round of applause. You deserve it. I'll allow it. So the rich man says, what do I need to do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus says, well, you know the Ten Commandments. And the rich man says, yeah, I know them. I do them. And he said, well, you lack one thing. You lack one thing. And it was that he had an unwillingness to let go of the thing that was most important to him. And for him, it was money. Maybe tonight there's something that you're holding on to that's keeping you from experiencing a real relationship with Jesus. And maybe it's not the location that you're in. Maybe you feel good. Maybe it's not the plans. You feel like you're good. But maybe it is a change in self. Maybe there's something that you're holding on to, a secret, a clutch, something that keeps you going, that makes you feel good, that makes you feel seen. But it's the one thing, that's keeping you from experiencing the kind, loving, personal, intimate relationship with Jesus. And so tonight I want to encourage you guys. We're going to go ahead and bring the prayer team up here. Is that what I do? Yes, prayer team. I want to encourage you guys. What's that one thing? I'm going to encourage you guys to surrender that one thing tonight. And maybe you say, Ashley, I'm good. I'm good. Okay, great. Then maybe you can be an encouragement to the people around you. Maybe you know what someone next to you is walking through and they just need a little voice to whisper to them, hey, it's time. It's time to let it go. I mean, that's what we're called to do, right? We're called to journey with people, be with them. And maybe you held on to something longer than you should have because you didn't have someone look at you and say, it's time. So be that for someone else. I'm gonna encourage you guys, think about the one thing. And also, if you're really giving it up tonight, I'm gonna encourage you to come and grab a white chip. We're gonna go into this song.